This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Brent and Dave from the Capital Auto Group Studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Welcome to Newsmakers, folks. This is Brent DeHart here with Dave Bourne, and it is Monday, and this is not going to be a lighthearted Monday. We're going to crash a bunch of topics.
We are
going to spill it today. Hold on for your hour. Thank you for joining us here at KYKN, where we talk local issues and ideas and institutions and individuals. Today, we're going to be talking about a bunch of topics going on, some of them local, some of them political, some of them economical, and some of them fun. We're going to start with the fun one. Should we start with the fun one? Get everybody warmed into the hour.
Yeah, that's it. It's Monday. Warm them up.
Sprague Little League's going to the Little League World Series.
Woohoo!
That is amazing.
That is.
Full disclosure, folks, I coached in Sprague Little League for about, 10, 11, 12 years.
Right on. You laid the foundation.
No, it was like 13 years. That's right. I was on the board for 15.
Nice.
And Sprague Little League represents, obviously, the areas and the schools that feed into Sprague High School.
Right.
And there's a number of little leagues. If you're not aware, for those of you who don't have kids or don't participate in little league, like you play some soccer or lacrosse or basketball or something else. Frisbee golf.
Come on now.
Let's talk about, first of all, congratulations to the kids. It is a monumental undertaking. It is huge. And I wanted to make sure everybody understands how this works. So, there's a bunch of kids in the Little League organization, and there are other sports organizations for baseball.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah,
there's
lots of them.
Babe Ruth League. There's a Cal Ripken League. There's a JBO Oregon, JBO, Junior Baseball of Oregon.
Okay.
Which was launched because people weren't happy with Little League or whatever. Anyway, but Little League's got all the press, and they've got ESPN, and they have the history behind them.
Yeah.
So this is a group of kids playing in a majors division. So you got to be league age 12 or less. Typically, it's 11 and 12 year olds, right? Occasional 10 year olds.
Yeah.
And they play an all star tournament, folks. So Sprague, in our area, we have a lot of little leagues. We've got Kaiser Little League. We've got West Salem Little League. They are always a powerhouse. It seems like we always, like to face off on West, the rival kind of thing,
sure.
Right?
Yeah.
And there's Pioneer and Parrish, and those all pretty much line up with the high schools. So Pioneer Little League feeds into North and so forth. Pioneer feeds into McKay, and Parrish feeds into North. All right, so all these little leagues,
screaming at the radio just
playing.
A second ago.
Oh, we got it wrong. All right, so then they play an all-star tournament for our region, which can go all the way out to Tri-Cities sometimes, and Corvallis, and for a while, and it may still be the case, even Eugene area schools, leagues. And so our district in Oregon plays an all-star tournament, and the winner of that tournament goes to the state tournament. And then the winner of the state tournament, which is a pretty big deal, because you are going up against, some Portland districts and so forth, and Bend won a couple years ago, which was pretty awesome.
That was.
All right, so you got to win the area, you got to win your district, then you got to win the state.
Then you got to win the region.
And then you go to regionals down in San Bernardino. And I heard a lot of people saying, hey, they're going to Little League World Series you're going to regional. It's not really the Little League World Series.
It's the next step.
There's some parallels to how the NCAA does it, where there's a regional, then there's a super regional, and then those who have advanced through those processes, there's a number of teams that make it to Little League World Series in Williamsport. All right, so nobody from this area, from Salem area, no team has ever made it this far. So it's
ever?
Not ever.
I know this is the seventh team from Oregon to go to the World Series.
Yeah, and some of them beat Sprague or West or South or something to get there, right?
They had to do that.
So very, very exciting for these families, for these little kids. If you read the article, I know that there's some sort of GoFundMe to try to raise the money for the kids. The kids are pretty well taken care of as far as Little League International takes care of them, getting them there. They buy their uniforms once you get to this location, because now you're representing, whole area, the West Division.
Yeah.
And very, very exciting. You can watch them on TV now and so forth. So that's how it works. And hopefully they'll come back and have a great experience and so forth. So congratulations to all of those kids. Maybe later this week we'll even name off a kid's name, so we'll try to get updates.
And we should have updates coming up this week. They start Thursday and go through the 25th. So that's a long round robin thing. Week and a half, right?
Yeah. It's, and then there's an international competition going on at the same time, and then the U.S. plays the international. And
oh, so wow.
Yeah. And you'd think the U.S. would just dominate, right?
But there's
some
think.
Incredible teams coming out of Central and South America and in Japan, and, it, you know, it's good competition.
It is.
Congratulations, though. It's very, very exciting for the whole Sprague Little League area and for the region. So let's follow them. Let's support them, folks. All right, we got a couple minutes. Let's start this conversation. We have to carry over after the break, but I made the mistake of going on Facebook this weekend.
You did?
I did.
And why was that a mistake?
Because sometimes you just read the wrong post, and then you can't stop thinking about it.
One of your friends?
So one of my college friends posts a quote from Anne Frank's diary.
Oh.
Anne Frank's diary. And he only did is post a quote and let it float out there, right? And the quote had to do with the Nazis. People are getting rounded up in the streets and taken away.
Oh, boy.
Right? That was the nature of the quote. And you know what he was fishing for, and he got it. People drew parallels between what happened in Holland, in the Netherlands, under Nazi control, to America today and its immigration policies.
Wow.
That's what I said. And I knew what he was fishing for. I guess I was not surprised that he got it, but still disappointed. So long list of Facebook discussions. And you know that's the best way to solve politics is on Facebook,
sure,
right?
Sure, yeah.
And you're going to change a lot of hearts and minds. But what was striking to me, what is disappointing, folks, this is the issue in America where you cannot have a rational conversation with people about public policy.
Never.
There is no parallel whatsoever from an invading, occupying force scooping up citizens of the country and imprisoning them or killing them based on their ethnic identity or their religious beliefs. An occupying, invading army in a sovereign nation taking their citizens. There's no connection between that and a sovereign nation of laws doing immigration enforcement and taking foreign nationals back to their country of origin.
No.
Those things are not connected.
At all.
They're not connected.
No.
It was the Nazis who are the peace and law violators, right?
Yes.
In America.
Yeah, it's, totally.
I mean, we don't get into too much immigration debate here, and it's not even an immigration debate. What this is about, folks, is people's emotionalism.
Totally.
People being connecting emotionally to what's happening and how they feel about immigration and immigration policy and immigration enforcement. And that's all tied to how much they hate Donald Trump, right? So it all has to do with these feelings. But you can't draw a parallel to Nazi occupation and what they did to Jews.
Not
Please
at
stop
all.
Doing that.
Yeah.
And so the discussion went on and on. Folks, there's no rational nexus, as they say in regulations. There's no logical connection between those two topics. But boom, America hits it right away. And they do it with a lot of emotion and a lot of feelings on the matter and a lot of opinions on the matter. That's a problem in America, folks. We need to be able to talk about the policy without jumping to some completely unrelated topic.
And because they feel it.
Yeah, because they feel it.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Stick to the facts.
All right. After this, I'm going to have a segment. My new segment. Let's put it in perspective. That's what I'm going to call
How
it.
How big is the soapbox do I need for
small.
You?
Small. This one's small. Oh, there's a lot to do. We're going to need a soapbox today.
Okay.
We're going to be talking about the governor. So hang on.
Oh, boy.
Hang on. This is Brent DeHart. I'm here with Dave Bourne on Newsmakers 1430 KYKN. Salem, you better be listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Color Tile of Salem.
Welcome back to Newsmakers, folks. Here, this place where we talk things rationally and try not to get too emotional about them. Right? Let's just talk about policy without getting into the extremism and the partisanship that kind of tends to pollute every debate. Just had this conversation in the office, Dave, about people arguing from one end of the political spectrum to the other end of the political spectrum.
Get out.
You can never, I mean, isn't that how discourse happens in America here?
Yeah.
And you may be, you know, conservative, but they're going to argue with you like they're somewhere left of Ted Kennedy and that you're somewhere right of, you know,
Ronald Reagan.
Yeah. Oh, well, Ronald Reagan. My God, he'd be a liberal, right? Yeah.
Right.
I was thinking Pat Robertson or somebody really. Anyway, let's just talk public policy. All right. What was my segment? Let's add a little perspective. I'm going to change the subject completely. That's my prerogative,
okay.
Right?
All right, we're going
to get back to some policy here as we talked about the governor again and the rural-urban divide in Oregon. All right. The post office. Been saving this one. U.S. Post Office.
Yeah.
I go in there and bought some stamps. People like to bitch about the post office.
Yeah.
They like to complain about service. And if you've traveled the world, you might realize that we have one of the most incredible postal services in the world. I remember traveling in Italy many years ago, but it was a 50-50 proposition if you mailed something from Italy, if you ever got it.
Wow.
If it ever came back to the States. It was just like, I might get there. So they're not perfect. Everybody knows that, but no organization is. But here's the thing. Dave Board's going to come to your house. He's going to come to your house. He's going to pick up a piece of paper at your house. And then he's going to take that to a small town in rural Georgia and hand it to a person at a different house. And you know what Dave's going to charge you for that? Couch change.
50 cents.
Yeah, 50 cents. Taco Bell change, right?
Right.
Ashtray change. Dave's going to take it for 50 cents, and they'll put it anywhere in America you want it to go. That's pretty remarkable.
Yeah.
I mean, like, the cost of postage is going up. And like, what do they do with it? Holy cow. Anywhere you want it to go in America, 50 cents.
Around the world.
Two quarters, folks. I mean, we should appreciate them a little bit.
Yeah,
right?
A little bit.
It is pretty amazing. Until
they lose a paycheck.
Yeah.
That happened.
Really?
Yeah.
Ooh,
a couple
boy,
weeks ago.
That's hard. All right, so the post office. Let's just put it in perspective, folks. It's like the Winston Churchill quote on democracy, how it's the worst form of government in the world, except for all the other forms of government. It's just like that. Like, we have this horrible post office service. They're just terrible, except for in comparison to everybody else's.
Right.
The other thing about the post office that, in their defense, is Congress gets in the way. You know, they lose money. And part of that has to do, and we've talked about this on Newsmakers in small segments, but part of that has to do with the compensation packages, that they're richer than the compensation packages for the employee, than UPS, than FedEx, than their competition. So they're paying more, and then they don't really have full control over the business model because Congress intervenes.
Right.
So this happened. This happened in the last year. Senator Wyden, there was a vote. They were looking at canceling Saturday service because there's always propositions on how do we stop the bleeding from the U.S. Postal Service losing money, right? We want them to operate like a business. We want them to be sustainable. We want to be so forth. So one of the propositions is, well, you know, we could cut back a lot on labor if we did not deliver on Saturday.
Didn't they just expand it to Sundays as well?
No. Not Postal Service.
Well, there's package delivery from the Postal Service.
Sometimes the Postal Service will, they do package. I don't know if that's subcontracting or what.
No, it's the actual post. My mail person delivered packages on Sunday. I was like, what are you doing here? And she goes, I'm delivering stuff. Okay.
Interesting.
On Sunday.
Maybe a different market. I don't know.
Freelancing?
We'll have to dive into that.
I don't know.
But this, what I'm getting at is Senator Wyden actually voted for this thing. Senator Wyden. To not cancel Saturday service. I might cancel Saturday service. I mean, we can wait till Monday for the ads. We can wait till Monday for the bill. I mean.
Yeah.
And the reasoning he gave was that, well, for people, I hope I'm getting this right. Senator Wyden, my apologies if it wasn't you.
You might want to look it up.
But so anyway, our Congress member, and I'm hoping. Hopefully we get this right. Basically, the rationale was, well, for some people in really remote areas, it's the only social contact they have. Is
correct.
The mail carrier. Yeah. I'm like, well, you know what the U.S. Postal Service is? It's not a social service agency.
Correct.
That is what's wrong with making it profitable. That is what's wrong, folks. It's not a social service agency. You have to stop treating every branch, program, everything having to do with government like it has some obligation for social services. They're delivering mail. Let them do so profitably.
Yeah.
We can wait till Monday. It absolutely, this day and age, when fewer things are coming in the mail, which is why you're losing money to begin with, we don't have to deliver 7 days a week.
This is true.
All right. Yeah. That is, let's put it in perspective with a little bit of public policy opinion. But yeah, they do a great job. 50 cents, man. 50 cents. I'm going to write a letter, a fan letter to the Boston Red Sox, 50 cents. You want a hate letter to the Yankees, 50 cents. You want to pay your bill, 50 cents. Anywhere in a nation. It's amazing. You want
it to, is.
It's, yeah, they do great work. Okay, moving on. This Oregon health plan changes for our CCO organization, and this is complicated, folks. We're going to tease you a little bit right now because, frankly, we're going to have to get an expert in here. We're going to have somebody who can speak to this in depth.
Yes.
So we had Dr. Bud Pierce, in a couple of months ago, and he was talking about the CCOs, coordinated care organizations. And folks, if you have your own private insurance, you don't pay any attention to this. You don't know much about it because it doesn't involve you.
Right.
But it's the Medicaid program. So you have the Oregon Health Authority tasked with spending the Oregon's Medicaid dollars, which of course is called the Oregon Health Plan. And they decided to have these CCOs to better coordinate care for the people who are on Medicaid. And they didn't cut any of their own bureaucracy. That was the issue that
right.
Dr. Bud
I remember
Pierce
that.
Was talking about. It was like they created a whole other bureaucracy that has now contracted to provide these services. So it's not the state and it's not the individual provider, but now it's a CCO in the middle. And there was no new revenue. And they didn't lay anybody off. So all they did is create more and more expenses of bureaucracy.
More red tape.
Nonetheless, CCOs exist. We've had an area CCO for a while, and they just lost the contract. Lost the contract to a company out of Eugene.
Wow.
Yeah, that's huge. And Pacific Source is the contractor. People bid and they get renewals and they're going to be the contractor to provide these coordinated care organizations, CCOs, services to people on Medicaid.
Interesting.
Yeah. There's about 100,000 people in Marion and Polk County that are on Medicaid that get these services. 100,000.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, that's a lot.
That is a lot.
I always like when they talk about Medicaid, everyone likes to quote, oh, this is for, you know, the disabled and the elderly and the children and so forth, because they don't want it to sound like it's just government spending unless it's for the children.
Right.
And so forth.
Or grandma.
All right. So big changes coming, having to do with that. There was even an appeal from the say, what do you mean we're not getting it? And it was really harsh if you read the full article, actually. It really treats the existing CCO kind of harshly, saying their application didn't meet any of the criteria. They just failed to provide the services, and their application just was not persuasive. We tested them in six different ways, and
wow,
Pacific Source achieved all six, and the existing one did not. Okay.
Couple minutes.
All right. We're going to talk about gun reform a little bit.
Wow. Okay.
Just a little bit. Just because
you just got a plethora of things today.
I do. We could do a whole show on any one of these topics, but and we were talking about this at KYKN about the local shootings recently, and all these shootings are very sad and tragedy. And then again, one of these things that people talk emotionally about.
Mm-hmm.
People talk emotionally about, are we going to? And actually, there's a good quote from a Republican having to do with, hey, we're interested in finding the root cause of gun violence more than we are politicians trying to create more legislation and regulation so that they can feel like they're doing something to stop it. Why don't we find out what the root cause is and maybe roll that out there? That came from Mike Carew, by the way. He's the chief of staff of the House Republican Caucus. And
were some wise words.
Yeah. Like, we're very interested in addressing the root cause of gun violence. So we were talking about this on Newsmakers. Initiative Petition 40 has been filed because these are the people that want the regulations, and they didn't get it with the legislation this session, and they're hoping to get it next time. And what did we say? We said it a few months ago when the deal was struck to take this gun control bill off the table that we're just going to see it again in February.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to see it again in February. So, of course, Jenny Burdick, she's a Democrat out of Portland. That's kind of her. She ran on her platform for gun control. She's really pushing this. And she says, well, we haven't started working on February yet, but it's definitely going to be a priority. Right?
Wow.
So, but the two fatal shootings a weekend ago, mm-hmm. right? Not this last weekend, the week before. And another shooting on Monday. And it really hits home, folks. It really hits home. Can we talk as a society practically without going to either zero control or zero guns, right? Doesn't seem how that's all the argument has to happen.
Yeah, there's like no middle ground there.
Well, the Democrats say they'd have middle ground, and this is about securing your guns. We're not saying not have them, but we want you to secure them. We want them to lock in, and we want you to...
So you can never use them.
If you buy them, to make sure that they don't get in the hands of minors, and they want you to report them if they're lost or stolen. I don't know what good that does. It sounds like that's fine. I could do that. I mean, somebody breaks in my house and takes my guns. I'm like, I don't report
it. That pretty much happens when somebody breaks in your home and steals stuff. You report it already.
A lot of them don't.
What?
A lot of them don't. People, yeah. So, yeah, can we talk about it rationally? I think what happened in the bill in this legislative session is that they threw more and more things into it.
Yeah.
Like, remember when it started with, if your guns are stolen and a minor gets it and gets hurt with it, then you could be criminally liable.
That is your fault.
Right?
Yeah.
You could have criminal and civil penalties against you.
That makes no sense.
So that's when, okay, but we want to talk about middle ground, and I don't know.
Reminds me of the conversation that happened way back in, 1775 maybe, when they were talking about Second Amendment, writing it in the Constitution. I can imagine the heated debate that went on for that to get into the Constitution.
A heated debate led to something, some big event or something.
You know, like Civil War.
Senate Republican leader Herman Bartziger.
It wasn't Civil War, was it? No, it wasn't Civil War.
It would be the Revolutionary War.
It was Revolutionary War.
Grants Pass said he could support, and he's a Republican. He's a Republican leader in the Senate.
Yeah.
And said he could support some sort of safe storage legislation. Sorry with me.
Isn't it already on the books?
No.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Devil's in the details, said Mike Carew. All right, we got to take a break. We're going to come back. We're talking about the rural and urban divide. And Kate Brown, you can't have it both ways. I'm Brent DeHart. That's Dave Bourne. And you are listening to 1430 KYKN. Salem's listening.
Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, presented by Les Schwab Tires, continues in the Capital Auto Group studios. Here's Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Sylvan Learning Center.
Welcome back to Newsmakers, folks. This is Brent DeHart. We were talking about Little League earlier and the kids that are going to Williamsport, Pennsylvania.
Yes.
Yeah, Williamsport. In case you're wondering why Williamsport, that's where Little League was founded. It's a pretty good story. You could Wikipedia it or something. It was started by one guy. Changed the world.
Wanted to have real uniforms. Had a dream.
A place to play, and every kid gets to play is a major tenet of Little League. It's one of the reasons why I favored it. As many issues as I had with Little League International's policies, which just got out of control as far as too much control.
Right.
But I can't tell you how many times I would be in a board meeting and I said, you know, this is about kids playing in the park, right? You know, this is about one time I went to an All-Star game and it was in Southern Oregon. So it was the state tournament in Southern Oregon and I was just in the neighborhood. I didn't have anything to do with the, except, you know, we had a representative there, a team. I don't even know whose team it was Sprague or somebody. Must have been Sprague. And I'm just walking up the field, you know, and I see the kids. They're out getting pregame, and it's from the dugout. And I'm like, hey, good luck, and I wave. And I got chastised and threatened to be thrown out of the facility by the umpire. I said, I can't interact with the players.
What?
I'm like, come on, people.
Seriously?
I'm a fan. All I did is say, good luck. I mean, it's like, really? Oh, no, you don't talk to them. You know, and there's because there's rules that they don't want. Coaches from outside the lines interfering. They don't want scouts. They don't want communications or whatever it was. The game hadn't even started. I'm like, come on, people. It is about kids
wishing
playing in
the kids
park.
Good luck and you almost get tossed. Crazy. That's ridiculous.
One time I had a coach thrown out of an All-Star game because he was hitting balls, warm up, right?
Yeah.
He's warming up and to the outfielders and he's hitting balls. This is all pregame warm up stuff. And one of the kids comes over, and he's going to shag for him, and he walks right up to him, and this was has to in line with the safety rules and all that.
Sure.
And a kid walks up. The rules say he has to have a full-on batting helmet on to catch the ball for the coach who's hitting the balls. He didn't have a helmet on.
Okay.
Right? He was ejected and removed and could not participate in the game. Oh. And
that's a little harsh.
They lost a volunteer for the rest of his life at that moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, and especially since he was doing it without the kid. The kid came in to help at the last minute, and it was not like he even had an opportunity to say, go put a helmet on. It's not like he was out there for 5 minutes. He didn't get a reminder. Hey, you need to have Johnny get a helmet on. Remember the safety rules? It's like, you're disqualified.
Wow.
Yeah, it was horrible. And that's when it's like, okay, people, you kind of go over the top. This is about kids playing in the park. And they want to – and then, you know – the world gets run by the insurance companies, right?
Right.
Where they just find one. All they have to do is find one incident, any accident, anywhere in America, and they'll have a new policy against it. And pretty soon you're not able to play the game.
That's ridiculous.
All right. Let's talk about Oregon, shall we? Rural-urban divide. It's quite a topic people are talking about. There's a great article in Salem Reporter. And how it affects us with legislation.
Okay.
And there's some really good examples in terms of how can we bridge it. Democrats think that they are listening. People in rural Oregon said not so much, or your solutions fit you and not us.
Right. There's no you know, medium, somewhere in the middle.
And the governor defends herself, saying, hey, you know, there's a couple of initiatives I pushed forward that are good for rural Oregon, and the Republicans didn't get behind them, and what's up with that? That's clearly a paraphrase, right?
Clearly.
But...
left a few words out.
So a lot of the revenue, and here's the thing, a lot of the revenue is generated in the metro areas. So 81% of the revenue for the state of Oregon is generated in metro areas.
Because they tax you to death in the metro. What are you talking about?
Well, there's that. And then I'm gonna say that's because you've done a great job over the last 25 years of killing the urban economy.
Yes, there's that too.
So, yeah. Well, when you kill their industry, you can't say, well, we're the ones making all the money. All right.
We talked about this on Friday, didn't we?
So 81%.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Okay.
You're
bringing
County
it
Fair.
Right back to me. Yes.
That's right.
Yeah.
That they do not understand the needs of the agricultural, the logging, the rural, the ranching, all of these other communities. 81% of the money is coming from the metro areas, but that money funds statewide initiatives like, you know, education system.
Right.
State highway funds, public education. So 74% of the last transportation fund is being spent in the urban areas. Yeah. Those are the areas.
So they're leaving the rural areas still gravel roads in.
Yeah, I mean, you can argue both ways. I mean, the more rural areas, they have more roads, and they say, well, there's fewer people, so fewer dollars, and where is your connection? And they want to connect it to the population. If we have 80% of the population, then we should get 80% of the dollars. And that is not always true when you're talking about building, say, energy infrastructure or road infrastructure or what have you. It's just not a direct parallel. Over half the dollars in that transportation package are in the spent in the Portland metro area. Over half.
From the state?
From that $78 million transit payroll tax. So
the city of Portland has their own little, city thing that paves the roads there. They're responsible for their own roads. Why is the state helping them?
So back to the who's contributing and who's making money. Between 1980 and 2018. So nearly 40 years. The share of Oregonians living in rural areas has declined from 26 to 19%. Oregon is becoming more urban.
Yeah.
Right? Used to be one out of four Oregonians. One out of four Oregonians lived in rural Oregon, and now one out of five Oregonians live in rural Oregon, and that was just 40 years ago. So, and here's another example, and like I said, pull out the state Salem Reporter if you want to dive into this, but they reimburse schools on a per pupil basis, which is one of the reasons why schools like to take attendance and push attendance and bring truancy down and what have you. But what do you do when your school only has 20 students? You can't fund a school based on a formula if you have 20 students.
No.
You don't have, you can't pay for the building. You can't pay for staff and materials based on what you're going to get reimbursed for 20 students. There, you cannot do a per capita formulary.
No.
Right? So that is has to play into it because somebody who's never lived in rural, never gone to a one-room schoolhouse, you know, well, just however many kids you got, that's what you get. Make your way. So urban lawmakers, according to this, they feel that they're aware of how it looks when they praise the urban populations and the communities and say we're going to work for them, but then they support bills. Do you support bills that stimulate rural economies, right? So, Governor Brown, quote from Governor Brown. Is there an urban-rural divide? Absolutely, she said recently in the Capitol Bureau. But I would really push back and say it's a lot of bunk to say myself as an executive and legislative leadership, that they don't care about rural Oregon. Yeah, you might care about rural Oregon. You just don't care about rural Oregon more than you care about getting reelected.
Correct.
Oh, that was harsh. Throwing that
way to say it, Brent.
Yeah. And I like this quote. It's from Jim Geisinger. He's a vice president of AOL, Associated Oregon Loggers. We talked to loggers on Friday.
Yes, we did.
The quote is, what they think they're doing to help the rural parts of the state doesn't help them. We don't need more government programs. We don't need more handouts. So that is the key. It's like what you think. We talk about it in Newsmakers over and over, folks, where they think, oh, you need us to make these decisions in your behalf rather than representing what we tell you we want. Right? You're not working for us.
No.
You're just acting on our behalf based on what you think is in our best interests. Steve Uffelman, he's the mayor of Prineville.
Okay.
Steve, thanks for the quote. It's just that we don't like somebody from outside telling us what we need to do because they think they know better.
Right.
I like Steve.
Yes.
Steve Uffelman, mayor of Prineville, says that's a slap in the face. It's an insult. It used to be that Oregon had that personality overall. I remember talking about, do we have to take a break?
No.
No. Okay, good. I remember talking about Hillary Clinton and how she just decided one day she's going to move to New York and she's going to file to be a senator. She's going to run for senator in the state of New York.
I remember
she's
that.
She's from Arkansas.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, would Oregonians put up with that? I mean, even if as liberal as Oregon is, I mean, you talk about carpetbagging. Can you imagine just plopping yourself down in the state and go, we're going to vote for you? I had like one friend in New York. I'm like, what are you people thinking? How do you, she's going to be your one of two Senate representatives, and she has no roots, no history, no basis to represent you in the Senate. But you guys voted for her, right?
Wow.
Let me just tell you, somebody from the outside, and I just thought, Oregonian, I mean, I think Oregon had more of that personality where, hey, don't tell us what's good for us. We're Oregon, and we're different, and we
Darn right. ourselves. Yeah. We are.
All right, we're going to continue this because there's something coming up where it's like, hey, Governor, I thought you said. All right, you're listening to Newsmakers. I'm Brent DeHart with Dave Warren.
New game show?
I think you said. Stick with us. We'll be right back on 1430 KYKN.
This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by our friends at Green Acres Landscape.
Welcome back to Newsmakers, folks, on this incredible Monday. We've been talking about Little League. We're talking about the governor. We're talking about the post office and gun control legislation. So I hope it's not too much for your hour. Sometimes I just wish we had 2 hours, Dave.
My head is just spinning.
All right. But we're going to continue talking about the rural Oregon divide and segue that very connected to the governor's vetoes that are coming up.
Oh, right? Okay.
So she announced Sunday she's considering using her veto power to kill proposals championed by rural lawmakers of both parties.
Yet she supports them.
Yeah, so shall we go back to you say you do, but do you forward policies that really help?
Wait, I think we need a theme song for that. This game show. this ought to be good.
She did have some examples, and she was an example of bringing broadband to rural Oregon.
Right.
And that the Republicans didn't jump on it and didn't take it and didn't really support it.
Okay.
I can't speak to that. Perhaps next time we have one of our legislators from the Republican Party on Newsmakers, we'll ask about that. But, you know, she's pushing back and saying, hey, you know, this, we got to do this for rural Oregon. And how about and it was not championed by. And so she's like, why are you calling me the bad guy? Right. She doesn't think she's the rural boogie woman.
Uh-huh.
All right. So. So the vetoes, and she and her staff say this is not political revenge. She's not canceling. She's not vetoing these things out of political revenge.
She's not, huh?
No, but it does seem to be targeting Democrats who didn't vote for the cap and trade or was not supporting it, right? And Republicans and rural Oregon. So, and hopefully you've all heard her quote recently. It was in the Politico where she said, you know, she's not going to be, she's not going to be punishing people, right? Seeking revenge. No, she said flat out, revenge is a dish best served cold and slowly. Mm-hmm. In other words, sometimes they just have to wait and see what the governor's going to do to them, right? A dish best served cold and slowly. So this proposed action goes against Democrats who opposed her cornerstone environmental policy, meaning cap and trade, that would have created carbon pricing system. So in other words, yeah, I'm going to use this for retribution. All right. So one of the things has to do with digging in wetlands, both removing material and filling of material. So this is one of those things where you don't know what you don't know because you only read a headline or the governor will give a sound bite. So Marianne Cooper, she's a vice president of Oregon Farm Bureau. Okay. And she said, hey, a lot of farms are classified as wetlands. That's the whole thing about wetlands and the determination of do you lose the ability to work the land.
Right.
Right. I remember this happened in Salem. I lived in a subdivision in Salem. Early 2000s, they were doing a wetland survey inside the city of Salem and so forth. And would I allow the surveyor to come take soil samplers and blah, blah, blah. Dave, I'm living in a subdivision
right.
of houses next to a school. And there was a little tiny seasonal creek that went through it. And I said, no. I'm like, no, you can't come on my property. Are you going to determine it's going to be a wetland? It's already fully developed, folks. This land use decision has sailed long ago. The citizens of this town are living on the street, and I don't want you to come and determine that we're living in a wetland, and then you can start to tell us what landscaping we can do. Or you can start telling us that a house burns down, we can't rebuild it. Or whatever purpose, or as a fiscal conservative, are you really going to spend money trying to determine if an already fully developed neighborhood in their backyards or wetlands? What's the purpose of that? What's the end game of that whole study?
Good point.
Don't spend the money.
Right.
How about doing some math? Why don't you plan for our future? All right, back to Brown. All right, so that's the point of the Farm Bureau. Says, hey, you know, there might be a ditch in a farm. And are we really going to have to go get a permit? Are we going to have to get a land use consultant? Are we going to have an environmental consultant and all these things just to do what we do on farms?
That's costly, too.
It is. It is. So, I don't know. So that's one of the things being vetoed by the governor. Also, a couple of dams in the Newport area, which, by the way, has a senator in the, from the Democratic Party. They want to rebuild these dams in Newport. And the Public Works Director, what's his name? Timothy Gross. Here's the thing about it. The governor's office says, there's a lot of dams, and we need to study this more. We need to study this. We need to study all of Oregon's dams, prioritize them, and develop funding mechanisms before we just dedicate funds and planning work on a specific dam. Folks, that is why the speed of government is the speed of government. Well, you know, I know that these dams might fail, and Newport could look like New Orleans, but let's step back and let's study it some more. Let's study foster kids and how the state is feeling, you know, failing them. But come on, let's study them, prioritize them, develop funding mechanisms. How about if you take some action, Governor?
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And it's in rural Oregon and so forth. And there was another one having Betsy that was something Betsy Johnson had supported. And that was, it looks like it's going to get vetoed as well. And Betsy, of course, was very early saying she doesn't support cap and trade.
Yeah, right.
So are we going to lead? Are we going to lead by ego? Are we going to set public policy on hurt feelings? Well, you didn't get me. You know, it's just, these are the people we're electing, folks. Governor Brown, I kind of get the people that want to recall her. There was a booth on the Polk County Fair. Did you see that?
I did.
Sign here if you want to recall the lawyer.
There was a sign in the petition when I left work on Friday from here at the coat of arms, by the way.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They were doing a huge one there. I almost stopped in to vote or to sign up, but didn't have time. I had to get home. But, you know, that's why government crawls at the pace of a nice
let's
flow.
Study it. Yeah. Or let's study a bridge across the Willamette for Salem for 15 years and then kill it. All right. One more quote from the governor. The time frame where urban Oregon was dependent on rural Oregon was a while ago. I would say probably more than four decades ago. So I don't think we can go back to those times.
Ouch.
Yeah. Well, there's a reason that you can't rely on rural Oregon and their economy to support all of Oregon, because you guys killed the rural economy.
Totally.
In Oregon.
Totally.
40 years. Try 25 years ago when Oregon had not fallen behind Washington in average household income. We got to go. Let's do it again tomorrow. This is Newsmakers with Brent and Dave.
See you tomorrow.
This has been Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.